Welcome to the Dark Depth Podcast, your go-to place for the modern and legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me, the ambassador himself, Michael Matson. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
You know, it's actually really nice. I take this back. There's actually some pros and some cons here, and I don't want to undersell this. Pro, this actually makes me sound like a monster, so downside, we had a very heavy rainstorm, which hopefully your house is okay. Everything's good.
No, my basement is flooded.
Oh, no. Yeah, water seems to be a running issue this day. I feel like a jerk now, just like going away from you, like, oh, my basement's flooded, and like not saying anything. So, how's everything down there? Is everything like okay? Is it like worse than last time?
Or? Well, it's wet.
Yes, that is true.
But I don't know if you understand how flooding works.
I mean, not really, right? Like, I don't know if it's going to be like a, you know, a foot of standing water, or if it's like a, it rained 6 inches outside, so we get like a half an inch inside, and just everything's like wet and annoying.
Anyways, everything's terrible at the end. So we moved a bunch of stuff out of the basement, which was an annoying process and not the first time we've had to do it. We had to pull up the flooring. Thankfully, our basement is not finished, so our flooring is, like, we have, like, the little gym, like, the gym puzzle pieces kind of things that you can, like, piece together. So, you know, when I say we had to pull up our flooring, it's not like we had to rip up carpeting and avoid mold. Although you do still have to worry about mold. So the floor is still wet. Most of the things are moved. I gotta say, moving bookcases is really annoying because I moved it with all the books still on it. Which, you know, I could have taken them off, but that process is also really annoying. So, like, there's not really a winning situation. I'm like moving a treadmill. But I don't think anything is damaged. We are aware that water can get in, so we try to keep anything that is valuable some height above the ground. And we're kind of just waiting for it to dry. Hopefully it finishes drying overnight, and then tomorrow I will go bleach the basement, which you're supposed, because it's like cement, so that's to prevent mold from growing. And then I will bleach it again on Friday. And between those 2 days, it should be good. But I have no faith, so I will probably bleach it again on Saturday. And then I will probably at least one day next week go, I don't know, like, let's be safe. Which is probably overkill, but, like, we had to pay for mold once, and that is expensive, and I don't want to do it again. And we are looking into waterproofing solutions, because what we have is not good enough, apparently.
Jeez, well, that sounds awful. Very sorry about that.
It's not great.
No. But, I mean, you, some bleach, the mop, downstairs, a little dissect podcast on. That sounds like a nice time.
Yeah, I mean, like, the actual bleaching process doesn't take that long. It's not really that big of a deal. It's not, you know, it's not fun. Because then I'm just, like, worried. It's like, did I get everything? Or am I using too much? Am I going to cause myself brain damage with the bleach fumes? And
that is my big concern there. Yeah, I was going to say that. I was like, eh, no, he probably knows.
You're supposed to dilute it, and I do, but, like, then when you dilute it, you're like, is it even going to be effective? Like, it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm probably doing this right, but I'm going to be terrified the whole time that I'm doing it wrong.
Oh, geez. Well, good luck. Very sorry. Yeah, mine is, I guess, thankfully not as bad, debatable, I guess, a different kind of bad. I ended up having some leaks around the house, which are, like, kind of, some are expected. We've got, like, these through window air conditioners, which I don't like, but, like, the house came with them. It is what it is at this point. So those were, they put in, like, regular window air conditioners into the windows there. So, like, I just have these giant holes where water can like seep in, which is super annoying. And I've got them in all of the bedrooms besides my daughter's room. They have a just a wall, window unit. But the boxes are just dripping water, just every one of them, which is not a huge deal. The one's actually fine, but the one in the living room, the one in the, the dining room, right? Those two have the leaks. And I was like, okay, just two leaks, not bad, not bad. My wife was going into the guest room to put some stuff away and was like, okay, there's water underneath the bed. Some of your cards are wet. So I was like, okay. And she's like, I think it's okay. So I went through and looked at them. The box included my Volks, which was great. It included going through it is just like not worth anybody's time. There, I can look over and I can see legacy cards, modern cards. Not great. But I mean, the silver lining is that my legacy deck was playing blue black scam not too long ago, and I was playing shadow, like a blue black shadow list last weekend at an event. I think we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So a lot of the cards that I actively play with, including my CEDH decks, are all have those cards. They were out of the way, so those aren't ruined, which is great. So the majority of my collection is totally fine. Since my Volks are safe, that means I probably only lost like $500 in cards. I'm going to estimate on the low end, but I will. It's fine. It's one of those things that shouldn't have been under the bed in the first place. So I will take this L. I really do want to get some kind of like storage solution though, just because I mean just in general I think it's good to have them in one place that I can easily access. The reason they're underneath the bed is because like they otherwise they're in a closet, which is like a nightmare for me to navigate to get them out in the first place, and then I just don't pull them out at all. Or when I do, I'll leave them out for like 3 days because like the hassle of putting them back in is just like not worth it to me. So I need to figure out some kind of other situation for me to have cards in. But I'm gonna feel this L for a little bit. I think this is gonna be a painful one when I start looking through in more details and see what got ruined. But you know, again, it is what it is. So lesson learned.
Yep. Don't put your expensive paper products where they can get wet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. But, I mean, some of them are okay. Like, I mean, I got like a Magus of the Moon in my hand here, and obviously people at home can't see this. It's great podcast fuel, but it's not bad. Like, it's definitely sleeve playable, but there are definitely some here that are, like, obviously bad. Like, I've got, I had a playset of Russian cast downs for Pauper, and those are ruined. Like I'm not gonna be able to get those back, I think. But I mean, most of the cards that I again normally play with are okay, just because they were in perfect fits or sleeves already. So like my Brazen Borrower, Surgical Extraction. I've got my fourth Daze because I only play three in my Legacy deck. My fourth Daze is not great, but fine. We'll be good. All good. All right. Well, I guess we could keep talking about L's, or we can start talking about, W's. Do you want to talk about W's instead?
Sure.
Okay. Let's jump into a community thing. I think this is a good thing to talk about. And actually, we need to get Rob on at some point soon, so we'll reach out and make sure that he gets on the show, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. I know we have some programming lined up already, hopefully for next week. But we had a friend, Tharge, who was running a legacy, or I guess a modern event, right? It was a modern event. It was, what was it called? Was it Madness at the Mausoleum?
Sure.
Okay. If it's not Mad, I feel like it could have been Modern at the Mausoleum, but I really feel like it was. Oh, man. I feel like Madness at the Mausoleum seems sweet. But, okay. I'll talk to Sarge about that later. But it was a really, really cool event. And I think there's a lot of things that we can kind of take away from this kind of influx of hopefully more community-run events.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I think one of the things that we're starting to see a little bit more, and again, this is a perfect thing for, I think, Rob to talk with us about, it's just, like, the idea that we're starting to see less support for Legacy in general, I think, from larger organizations outside of, you know, your car titans and, you know, obviously we still have some local stores like Al Central, I know, has an event next Saturday, which I believe I'm planning on attending. That, you know, outside of those kinds of events, those kind of established stores, we're not seeing as many people, as many opportunities for Legacy as we saw, obviously, pre-pandemic. So it's really cool to see somebody actually providing this kind of events, even if it is modern. I think being able to have people in the community run their own events, have their own prize support, and hopefully, you know, give people a good time. This seems like a really good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I know I did not do well. I got there a little late and ended up taking some losses to some good friends, which was awesome. I know you ended up making top 8, I believe, right?
Yeah, I'm the best, so obviously.
Clearly, yeah. What did you end up playing? You're playing Amulet, right?
I did. You know, I just, like we kind of said last week, it's probably the best deck for, well, it's definitely the best deck for me personally to be playing right now. Looking at the numbers, second best results in the format currently, and yeah, it's fun. I don't know. And I own it.
Yeah.
And looking at it makes me happy. You know, just like a lot of good reasons to play the deck.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. I mean, like, that is definitely one of the decks I think that has, I don't know what the top 5 decks would be, but like, that's definitely up there. I'm sure Scam and Murktide, Yawgmoth.
Murktide is not showing good numbers right now. Have you not seen the modern data that was going around?
I guess not. Oh, I mean,
I should share it with you. You should be informed.
I should be informed.
Yeah, so like Yawgmoth is the best performing deck right now. Amulet is number 2. I don't remember past that necessarily. Like, I do remember some standout stuff. Like Murktide Regent, I think, is like a 49.8%. Scam is pretty high. Rhinos was also kind of surprisingly low, although it's probably being dragged down by the fact it's like the most played deck. Black White Grief Scam was surprisingly high. It has like 53.1%, which,
okay,
I feel like that deck doesn't put up results. So that's kind of crazy, but I think it's just like people very consistently winning with it, just not at like an aggressive rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, like, if you're, I've been playing a lot of MTGO the last like 2 days, and the number of people that I see just jamming Rhinos nonstop is wild. I haven't seen a lot of those other decks, those top decks, appearing in anywhere near the numbers that Rhinos has.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's a thing. I have seen actually a decent amount of Amulet too, so I will give a little credence there.
So I think Rhinos is surprisingly fun to play for like a fairly simple deck. Just like on its surface, it seems like it's like, okay, counter your thing, kill your thing, cast Rhinos, and it doesn't sound like it would be enjoyable, but I think it just, I don't know, it ends up being a good experience somehow. Like I have fun when I play it, and most people I know who have picked up the deck have also been under the impression that it was fun. So it makes sense that it is so commonly played, and especially because it is a strong deck. So, like, you know, being good and fun at the same time is pretty great. It's also not surprising to me that Amulet is being picked up more and more. I think it's one of those things where people see how explosive it is, and like, when Yawgmoth wins, it's like kind of, okay, whatever, Yawgmoth wins. But when Amulet wins, it feels like, oh, that deck is doing something stupidly powerful. So it's not even surprising to me that more people would lean towards picking up the deck they see as explosive and, like, wanting to learn how to play with or against it pretty far in advance of the RC. Although I would say people should be doing the same thing for Yawgmoth, because I personally am under the impression Yawgmoth is much more complicated to play than Amulet. That deck is, I don't know, there's a lot of pieces.
Yeah, a friend of ours was playing the deck, and he picked it up for, I believe, the first time, and did pretty well with it. I mean, his big main thing was like, you know, I've never played this deck before, yes, but like, I have played with Court of Calling for years, I've played with Birthing Pod before, like, I have this frame of reference that, like, the Creature Toolbox deck is not super, out of my range or anything like that. I think that's part of my issue with it. I'm so used to playing these kind of, like, you know, blue tempo decks in the format that, like, I'm kind of out of touch with my old Malira Company days. So that's a little behind me at this point, so I think I would have a little more trouble picking up Yawgmoth. I think where you've been playing decks, I know you play a lot of decks in the format, but I think Yawgmoth is a little different from what we normally play or have played recently, so I think that might add to some of the difficulty for people trying to pick up the deck for the first time.
Yeah. The other deck that stood out to me too, by the way, was Hardened Scales. And it's funny because it's like, if we go back in time just like a year ago, if people played Hardened Scales, we're like, what is this person doing? You know, like, it felt like a joke. And now it's just, I don't know, when I play against that deck looks impressive. And the numbers definitely support it. It has like a 53% win rate, if I remember correctly. Not actually looking right now.
Okay.
But 53 sounds right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That deck is one of those ones. Obviously, it has picked up some pieces over the past calendar year, you know, year and a half, right? I think Patchwork Automaton is obviously a huge benefit, right? But I think the big thing is, like, just Agatha's Soul Cauldron, which, obviously, going back to Yawgmoth, is an important piece that has made that deck even more difficult to interact with. But in this deck, too, there's just so many uses for your counters. Like, the 1-1 counters are fine, right, in the Yawgmoth deck, but the 1-1 counters are insane when you are giving them to creatures that are taking the activated abilities of things like Arcbound Ravager or Walking Ballista or Hangerback Walker. Like, there's a lot of things where you really do want those extra 1-1 counters here and there.
Yeah. I played against that deck last night, and they just, like, murdered me on turn 3 or 4. They just went, like, turn 1, Hardened Scales. Like, okay. I think I killed it. They played a second one. I'm like, well, that's awkward. Then they played Patchwork Automaton. I'm like, this is looking not great. And I missed my land drop. And then they went, like, Agatha's Soul Cauldron, trigger Patchwork. So now it's got, like, what, 3 counters on it. Play Walking Ballista for 0. Now it's got 5 counters on it. I think they played something else for 0. Now it has 7 counters on it. And then activate Soul Cauldron. Now it has 9 counters on it, and it is a Walking Ballista. With Ward 2.
Yeah. Yes. Good. That's insane. And, like, that's, like, not, obviously, like, it's unfortunate for you, yes. But, like, that's a reasonable thing that can happen with that deck. It is, I mean, all the creatures, all 20 of them in the main deck, all, if they don't come in with 1-1 counters on them, which, you know, Patchwork of Automaton is the only one, it can get them pretty quickly, just by casting other artifact spells. But I think this also makes it so it's a very, very solid Urza Saga deck. Like, all your creatures are artifacts already, you have a bunch of other artifacts in the deck, you don't necessarily mind, using the activation to actually get constructs, or, you know, you can actually tutor up a creature off of your Saga too, like, go get a Zabaz, even if it is your second one. Like, there's just a lot of, like, really, really good things to love about this deck in total. And I don't know if you've actually gotten to play, I guess you've played against the Echoing Deeps as well.
Like, just the card, or is there,
well, in this deck? In this deck.
No.
Okay. Yeah, if you have not seen this, Echoing Deeps is one of the caves you get from Lost caverns of Ixalan, there we are, you may have Echoing Deeps enter the battlefield tapped with a copy of any land card in a graveyard, except it's a cave in addition to its other types, and it, otherwise it taps for a generic. So you can actually just have it come into play on turn one, just untapped, produce mana, it just works perfectly fine like that. But if there is something in your graveyard that you would be interested in, you can just go get it. And I think with this deck, obviously with Inkmoth Nexus, being able to actually trade that out and maybe get that back is huge. That's a nice little benefit. But also, obviously, you know, Urza Saga, just having two more copies of that in the deck seems like a pretty nice thing to have.
Yeah, having eight Urza Sagas is very strong.
So, yeah, I'm definitely interested in playing this again. I mean, I've played this before, and I really enjoyed myself when I was playing it last time, so I'm sure it can't be any worse. I did want to even mention, too, I think, did Mill win a challenge or something like that? I thought people talking about the Mill, and I was hoping that was, like, a weird joke that I was seeing, but I don't know. It seems like a...
I don't think so.
Okay.
Good. I know it has been... Actually, yes. It did win a challenge, I feel like.
We gotta...
I don't know.
Go through the archives here.
We are getting very off topic.
We are getting very off topic. I know. I'm not doing a great job running the ship today. The Mill deck is... The only thing I wanted to, like, I guess, mention about this... it got... It top-aided challenge last month, right? So, yeah, this is fine. We don't even need to talk about this. I did see someone talking about the Mill deck. Oh, is that Cincinnati? That's why. That's where I'm missing it from. Yeah, someone had a strong finish with the Mill deck in Cincinnati. Not a deck that, is really on my radar, but I guess if you're looking at the other top decks here, I guess you're doing a lot of things that Yawk wouldn't like to see. You're doing a lot of things that the Rakdos midrange might not like. Murktide doesn't like getting necessarily milled out here. Like, there's definitely some benefits to having that kind of deck right now. But it's never been a deck that I've found particularly strong and, like, wanted to gravitate towards. But I guess it's something worth bringing up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It is a deck. I don't know. Sometimes it looks really good, and then other times it's just like, oh, you did nothing to impact anything, and then you died.
Yeah, but that's how I normally feel. I mean, like, you're playing four copies of Fatal Push. You're playing four copies of Drown Unlock, so, like, you do have ways to kill creatures, but, like, the format's not also dependent on having creatures come into play necessarily, right? Like, there's a lot of situations where, like, Primeval Titan will just come into play on turn four, and you have nothing for it besides maybe a Fatal Push or, you know, a Tasha's Hideous Laughter or something like that. It just doesn't seem super attractive. I say that fully knowing that Archive Trap would be kind of nice there, but that might not be a concern depending on what the amulet start is.
I think the amulet matchup is pretty good against Mill, for what it's worth. Well, depending on how many endurances you're playing. The more endurances, the better. That's not me saying endurance single-handedly wins the matchup, but it does give you a lot of points. The thing that I find frustrating about Mill is Tasha's Hideous Laughter is just like, you play against Hammer and you're like, well, pay three mana and mill your entire deck. And then you play against like Amulet, it's like, well, play Hideous Laughter and Colossus, Titan. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like not nearly as good. But I guess that's like...
Well, my thing is just the lack of consistency. Not knowing what you're getting out of what is supposed to be your best card is, I think, frustrating. Mm-hmm. But I have had people point out to me, like, Surgical Extraction does stop a lot of the good decks in the format right now. So just being able to, like... Mill Rhinos and then Surgical them is pretty strong. Or, yes, milling Titan and Surgicaling Titan is very strong. So,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It definitely is. It's one of those decks that, like, I'm going to lose to it eventually. I don't think it's happened in a while, thankfully, but I'm going to lose to it eventually. I'll be very upset about it. But in the meantime, I'm just kind of like, eh, yeah. So, wanted to segue into the deck that I was playing at the Madness of the Mausoleum. I'm calling it Madness of the Mausoleum now. I'm aware that it's actually Modern, but I really do like the sound of Madness in the Mausoleum. But the I ended up playing like this like blue-black shadow deck. I think it ended up making like a top 8 of another challenge. I say that fully knowing that I'm not going to look it up myself, but it was a I don't know. The deck was okay. It ended up being a blue-black list that was, like, playing... Let's see if I can actually find that particular list. Playing, like, a full playset of Death Shadow, playing Ledger Shredders. We got some, like, Thought Seizes and Dreadnought Unlocks. Like, the deck's pretty straightforward, I think. The top end did have a couple copies of Murktide Regent, so it's, like, some mix between, like, blue-black... Death Shadow and, like, the Murktide list. I guess if I had to, like, split it, but I don't think it... I don't see the appeal of... I have said this before, like, I think Shadow really is a sweet card. Obviously, it does a lot of powerful things. Being weak to Solitude is obviously a huge bummer, but, like, it's not everywhere in the format right now. The one thing that actually bothers me about the deck is that there's a lot of situations where the cards you are playing in blue-black, you just don't have, like, the efficient removal that you want. That's not a billion cards. Like, I was playing, like, a copy of Bitter Triumph in the list, and the number of times I discarded a card or, you know, paid 3 life, and I was like, oh, this'll be worth it. And then the card spells gets countered by, like, Spell Snare or something like that was way too high for my liking. Not a huge fan of that. Also, the one card... I'm trying to think what the name of that card actually is. It's a very common card. Oh, the Stalactite Stalker, which is a card I know I've seen play in Legacy, obviously. I played that one. That card is, like, nuts. That one I was actually very, very happy to continue playing. I might try to continue to run that back if that deck's going to be that sweet. The deck is, like, Shadow's very good at getting descending naturally anyways, just between, you know, your surveilling... Well, this is the deck in general. I'm just thinking of cards now, but you have a lot of, so, like, surveil from, like, Consider. You have... Fetch lands, you've got Bauble, so, like, you have a lot of ways just to put cards in the graveyard, permanent cards in the graveyard, so it would just, like, naturally, like, be, like, a 5-5 on turn 5, and with Menace, too, the number of people who were like, oh, flash in a blocker, and it's like, okay, and they're like, block, I'm like, no, you can't do that, I'm like, no, but seriously, it's like, yeah, no, but seriously, you need two creatures, that's Menace, I'm like, oh, just a lot of text on this thing.
There is a lot of text on that card. It is a very strong card. Definitely agree. It's funny watching people debate if they're supposed to play that or Delver. Again, I know we're talking about a different format there, but it's funny to me that it's like at least once a year it's like, is this card better than Delver?
yeah.
But yes.
Yeah, I mean, but Delver Secrets is just like, obviously, an insane rate, and when it flips on turn one, it's great. But, like, I think people are expecting it to flip all the time, and, like, that obviously doesn't happen. I think you and I have both been in situations where it's like, I'm going to cast this Delver on turn one. If it doesn't flip naturally on turn two, it's probably not going to flip for, like, 3 more turns. But a lot of people hate that kind of feeling, so I get that.
Yeah, but Stalactite Stalker is really good. I was trying it out in Pioneer, and I was kind of impressed with it there. I haven't actually played it in Modern or Legacy yet, but it's nice to know that you felt like the card was good in this format as well. Makes me feel good about buying my copies, because I ended up not playing it in Pioneer. So, And I don't think I will play it in Legacy, not because I don't think it's good, but just I don't see myself playing the decks it goes in, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is, I will shout out, I guess, Phil, because Phil's the only reason I picked up the playset. I saw that he recorded a video with it, and he's like, this is good. I was like, yeah, fine, Phil. I'll spend $5 to get my playset of extended art Stalactite Stalkers, but yeah, it is actually very, very good. It's I don't want to say even underwhelming. It feels like it could be underwhelming, but you play it and just like the second you're like, oh, it's a 1-mana 2/2. Like, that's fine. Like, 1-mana 2/2 with Menace is just a fine card already. The fact that it gets bigger throughout the game, the fact that it like threatens to kill things. Like, I did get to kill a Dryad, the Dryad of the Elysian Grove with it, which, you know, the fact that it got up to 4 power is really good. And it stopped me from dying, so, you know. Once again, just blocks and blocks of text.
Okay. But, so, impressed by that card, but overall, not loving the deck?
Not loving the deck, yeah. There are definitely some things that I think need to be addressed. I think losing red, not having access to Unholy Heat, especially in this format where... one, you want instant speed like interaction, but also like you need to be able to kill those Primeval Titans, those Yawgmoths. You need to be able to kill Tidebinder, even like just reliably. Like, I really, really want to have those kinds of effects, and I do obviously love Fatal Push. I think Fatal Push does a really great job, kind of filling in some of the gaps. But you can't lean on that. That can't be your number one piece of interaction. It just doesn't cover enough bases. Same thing with Lightning Bolt. I think Unholy Heat is really a really great place to be in the format. So I'm trying to make sure any deck that I'm playing with Death Shadow, at the very least, in that blue-black shell, has red in it as well. Which actually brought me to like a deck I've been trying to work on the last couple days. Which, I know you're going to hate the one card, but I will let you know that the name is now misleading. I made this deck called Grixis Vial. And I had Aether Vial in the deck. It has now been cut. But the deck is just like a really instant speed focused deck. Let me make sure I send this to you so you can judge my deck choices here. It is, I mean, it in a lot of ways, it's just like a Grixis tempo list, right? Like, I'm used to playing Grixis Shadow, so like I wanted to try to get something that kind of evoked that same feeling. But I end up having copies of Ragavan, with a Stalactite Stalker, again, just because I like that card, Orchestra Spellmaster, and Tishonoth Tidebinder. So like you have this ability to play creatures on turn one, or you can play them at instant speed. The one thing I actually added in, just because I was interested in trying it, is Malcolm, Alluring Scoundrel. Again, I'm not exactly sure how good that card is, but it is able to just, like, come down on turn two. The format is obviously does have Orchestra Masters in it, but not as prevalent in Modern as it is in Legacy, for example. I had a number of games where it's, like, just looting with Malcolm, play at end of turn. Just another two-drop to kind of pair with Orchestra Spellmasters that I was pretty happy with. Again, I need to update my Mox field, but... I definitely have been messing around with this deck. I think it does have legs. My big thing is making sure that I kind of figure out what to do with some copies of these cards. Like, I have things like, currently updating the list as we speak. Like, I was playing, like, Lorien Revealed, because I thought that would be a really cool one to be able to cast off out of Malcolm, but I also wanted to have, like, another land. Realistically, it just wasn't a concern. It never really came up. So I've gotten to the point now where I'm like trying to essentially get to a place where the deck has reliable mana. I still can actually get Delirium with some amount of regularity. And then also being able to play some of these newer cards that I haven't gotten to play with, the Stalactite Stalker, the Malcolm. And obviously, Tishonoth Tidebinder, which is a card I just personally haven't gotten to play with. But I obviously have enjoyed it. that card's really dumb. I got to counter someone's Ring Protection trigger which was fantastic. Also trying Molten Collapse, which I'm a little less sure about, but it has been good so far. At the very least, it's just a sorcery, like a Dreadbore, right, at worst. But I have gotten to, you know, live the dream and descend and, you know, kill a... I'm trying to think what I did today. I killed a Construct Token and killed an Amulet. I got to kill an Ozolith and a Ravager, I think it was a Ravager. But, like, you know, it's like that's good enough. That's all I really wanted. So, I'm not exactly sure how good this deck is, but it's at least a good project to try to work on.
I feel like it just sounds like a worse version of the Grixis Wizards deck that already exists.
Well, okay, let me look at this, the Grixis Wizards list. Are they playing Ragavan?
They are.
Okay. They're not playing Stalker?
They are not playing Stalker. And I'm not saying that it's, like, right to not play Stalker. Granted, they don't have Bauble, so if you're playing Stalker, I feel like I want to play Bauble. But, like, their lists are similar. I think Malcolm is not good in Modern. I can elaborate on that if you would like. But the lists feel similar, and I feel like you could very easily you could cut, like, the counter spells if you wanted to and play Stalkers and then just, like, trim some of those fat, like, Archmage's Charm. I don't know, maybe, like, a Pierce or a Preordain, like, somewhere else to fit in the bubbles. You could also, like, cut a Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah, I mean, the Malcolms, I do see the Malcolms are probably not, like, the best threat possible. The other option was Fairy Mastermind, but I don't... And I guess I could be wrong here, too. Like, I have enough things to kind of punish card draw between the Orcish Bowmasters and then post-board, I've got the Shieldreds. So I don't think I need to try to tax that more, but I guess maybe that would be cool to have a way to force them to draw and make my Bowmasters bigger. I don't know if that's...
I think you're going too deep. I think I'm going too deep. You just want to play cards that are good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing, too. The Malcolm goes with the game plan of being able to let me keep up mana. Like, I've been having a lot of situations where it's just, like, I'm just going to hold up 2 mana, I'll hold up 3 mana, I'll play a, Malcolm in a turn if you don't do anything, or if it's something inconsequential. I have Drown of the Lock always kind of on lock. I think the version I have up now is still a little outdated. I've added some counterspell to the main deck as well. Like, the deck does a really good job of just holding up mana and passing the turn. So having a cheap threat that I can put on turn one is good. But having something that I can also cast if I need to, use my mana if I have the ability to use my mana, is something that I would want. I just don't know what other 2-drop I would be interested in playing. Like, there is... I could be wrong. I don't think there's a lot of, like, valuable... I'm going to say this and people are like, wait a second, Billy! But I don't think there's a lot of valuable 2-drops creatures that I really want to play outside of, a Malcolm or a Fairy Mastermind. Like, Orcish Bowmaster is kind of like the whole F-tier of 2-drop flash creatures. And after that, I feel like it's just like a very sharp decline.
I mean, I think you can just play Snapcaster Mage.
Who plays Snapcaster Mage?
I think Malcolm is, like, not good. Because I don't think the filtering is particularly... Like, obviously filtering is good, but it's not insane. The card dies to everything, so not having an immediate effect is, I think, really bad. Because it's a 2-1, right? So, like, yeah, I don't want to play a 2-1. I don't want to play any X1 creature that doesn't have an immediate impact on the board state in this format. I will give a pass to Stalker and Ragavan because they are so powerful, and Stalker in particular, like, grows out of the range of it. I also just think, like, in order for Malcolm to become an actively good card, you need to attack with it 4 times. And, like, if you're getting through with any creature 4 times in your control deck, like, you're probably winning anyways. So, like, I just don't think it's actually adding anything.
So I see what you're saying. The Malcolm ends up, I mean, in the game that I've been playing it, obviously it will occasionally eat some removal spells, but it connects for a long time. Like, the one deck that doesn't actually connect it against, funny enough, is obviously your good friend Amulet Titan, just because they have the 0-3 blocker with reach, which, again, why does it have reach? Why does Grazer have reach? But that is, like, the one matchup where it doesn't normally connect, but otherwise it has been connecting very regularly. I've been getting, you know, 2 to 3 loots out of it before it dies.
But, you know, like, is that that strong? And do you think that is actually contributing much to you winning those games?
Well, so one thing is it allows me to actually get Descend without having to have a fetch land, because I'm just, like, I'll put a land in the graveyard, or I'll put a creature that I can't use in the graveyard, and that will, you know, trigger the Descend for Stalker, so it has a little bit of synergy there. It also has just, like, improved card quality. Like, I literally just have better cards in my hand, because I'm not, you know, worrying about that. So, I don't know. I think it is... I'm sure there's another card I could think of that might have a greater impact overall, but, like, it is definitely non-zero. Like, the looting ability in this deck is definitely just a good thing to have. And I've also gotten to the point, too, where, like, I'm pretty sure my opponent has a removal spell, but, like, they don't want to cast it, and then I get to the attack to give me the fourth counter, and they're like, okay, well, I guess I have to kill Malcolm now, which I don't know if 2 mana to deal 6 damage and get a removal spell is, like, the worst trade-off either.
I don't know. Not convinced. But yeah, like, you could be wrong.
Well, I mean, in, like, you could be right. Like, you also could be right where this could be better just as, like, 2 Murktide Regents, right? Like, that probably would be more impactful, probably wouldn't be more games. So maybe that is something I should be trying to steer towards. Because, like, the one thing I do like about this list as well is it actually doesn't care about the graveyard outside of the Unholy Heat. That's in, yeah, Unholy Heat. I guess Drown in the Lock technically, right? But it doesn't care about my graveyard, it cares about my opponent's graveyard. But the deck is very good at not over depending on the graveyard, which I feel like is one of the things that, I guess we're not worrying about it now, but with the bug beans list back in the day, that was one list that was like, okay, well, how are you casting all these delve spells? Because, like, some of them, like, I understand, but, like, there's just, like, no way we're casting, you know, 2 Murktide Regents and a Murderous Cut in this game, unless, like, you already have 3 beans left and are out and you're just, like, getting a recall every time you cast one of them. Like, I just don't see how we do this. This one is obviously just a little bit better there, and even post-board, I don't have any cards that focus on the graveyard. Yeah, so I like that. I guess the one thing, actually, I'm not sure. No, I guess the Stalkers actually do get affected by, like, some kind of, right? Like, Leyline of the Void is annoying for Stalker because the cards need to go into the graveyard, and they won't with Leyline of the Void. But, you know, that's kind of a non-factor against something like a Relic of Progenitus effect or something like that. But maybe I'll try that. Maybe I'll try the next league. I'll try cutting the Malcolms, putting in Murktides, and see how that goes instead. Could be better.
It's definitely a better card, so.
It's definitely a better card, yes. I will agree, just in general. I mean, and, like, I have 23 instant sorceries in the list, so, like, there's plenty of food for it. And I think only having 2 of them, maybe. I guess we'll figure that out. But only having 2 allows you to not have to worry about, you know, overfeeding them or underfeeding them, anything like that. So we'll try that. But it has been a good exercise to, like, try to work through this kind of list. It's I feel like not something I'm particularly good at. I know we have some friends who are very excellent deck builders in their own right. So I'm not used to trying to work on decks, so this has been a good thing for me, I think, as a player, trying to make this work outside of a CEDH deck or something.
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I think it is a good exercise in a way, but like, I don't think that most Magic players, like, I don't think not being able to build a deck actually really is going to impact your Magic playing career or whatever you want to call it at all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's already plenty of people who can brew good decks. I just think being able to play the deck is what matters.
Yeah, I mean, but I also do want to, like, make sure I understand, like, the connection to the deck. I feel like the one thing that kind of gets lost is that, like, when you are playing a deck, like, a very well-established deck, a deck that you've been playing for years at this point, like, being able to know, like, what you need to change in your deck, like, that, you know, the metagame call, like, what do I need to add, what do I need to take out, I think that's usually the big thing. Where I think a lot of people will look at a deck and be like, well, this deck in this iteration will never be able to win a big event right now. So we'll put it down and we'll just never play it again until it's good again. And I can play all these lovely cards like Lava Spike. Until Lava Spike is great again, I refuse to play any deck. It's like, but like, you could just like change your deck slightly. And then your deck is probably still good.
I don't know. I actually think putting it down is probably generally more correct, and not enough people do it.
Well, like, I mean, we literally just banned Fury, and then Rakdos Scam was like, yeah, I'm still good, though, guys. I'm still good.
But I mean, that's not the same thing, though, right? Like, Fury wasn't the problem with the deck. I'm saying, like, if a deck is, like, not winning in a metagame, like, yes, you can make some changes, and sometimes it's going to be enough, but, like, I think 9 times out of 10, you're just lying to yourself. And, like, you just want to, no, like, and I get it, because, like, you know, you play a deck, you enjoy it, you like the play patterns, you're winning with it, it makes you feel good. You feel that connection, and I get not wanting to give that up, but I think, you know, a lot of times you're better giving it up, or maybe just ignoring the problem, because even if a deck, like, if you play against Scam, and it's, like, 15% of the metagame, and you go to a 10-round event, like, you're going to play against it once, cool. If you beat everything else, it doesn't matter. Like, maybe you play against it twice as you get to the top. I don't know, maybe you play against it again in top 8, but, like, if I go 8-2 in a 10-round event, like, I'm not mad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, and I'm trying not to, like, I guess to, On the far side, I'm not trying to say, like, you know, like, don't kill your darlings, right? Like, there are some times where you just need to give up the ghost and move on with your life. I'm talking about the times where it's, like, the deck is, like, it's not way off, right? It is competitive. There are some matchups that are a little tougher than they should be, but, like, the deck is, like, still able to, like, compete. If the deck is, like, I'm probably not going to play, I'm going to insult, like, 10 people here. I don't know who this is. I'm not playing, like, 1-1 tribal, right? Like, I'm not trying to put forth a experimental frenzy storm deck. Like, that deck probably is not going to work. Yeah, that I agree with. But, like, I still think there is, like, some shell of a lot of tier lists. I don't know if you've been seeing this all over the place. I feel like people have been, like, going tier list crazy the last week or so. People were saying, like, something like obviously, well, we were just talking about Mill a second ago, but, like, you know, Mill is not dead. It's not the most in well-positioned deck, probably, but, like, the deck's not terrible. I could imagine you trying to make that work. I also could imagine something like Creativity, which is a deck that, like, I know had a very good beginning, I guess, of 2023 and has since fallen off, but, like, the deck is not way dead, you know, bring out the shovels. It really has to be, like, this could probably be better. We have better options, but that deck, I could imagine you putting some work in and actually making it worthwhile, at least.
Yeah, but I also do think that is a slightly different thing, because you're not building it from the ground up, right? Like, you're taking a finished product and going, I just need to tweak this, whereas you are starting from the ground and trying to go, here is, like, a whole new thing. And I don't think, like, I think they build similar muscles, but not necessarily the same.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that is true. Yeah, and it, I think it's still good, though, to, like, try to push those designs that are not established yet. I mean, like, they have to start somewhere. And obviously, if this doesn't end up being, like, the, you know, best deck in the format, that's still okay. I think there's still some reasonable things that come out of this. Like, I still think combination of Ragavan and still, like, say, Stalker, I could see it that being a really strong thing to continue trying to do. Even if it's not in the shell, like, maybe there is some list that's, like, you know, Ragavan, Stalker, and Ranger Captain of Eos. And I end up playing this in some kind of, like, Mardu shell, and I'm playing, like, four copies of Unearth. And that seems like, oh my god, that seems sweet, actually. Okay, give me a second, I'm gonna build that first, and then I'll come back to this. But, like, I can imagine something like that still being worthwhile. And, you know, if you start taking that same kind of approach, like, you know, if I'm playing Stalactite Stalker, if I want to trigger Descend a little bit more often, maybe I start playing, like, some kind of, like, looting effect. I don't know what effect that might be at this point. Obviously, my best friend Faithless Looting has been culled from the format, but, you know, there could be another card in there that might work pretty well. Maybe, like, a, what's that, Daring Scoundrel or something like that. I'm not sure, but, you know, I think trying to open the door to more, potentially more decks is a good way to at least open your mind to other possibilities and hopefully make your next deck even that much better.
Man, I am very mad that you brought up Unearth plus Ranger Captain, because if I play against that even once this week, I will be
man,
an unfun,
I mean,
experience.
You know, watch out, I'll do it. I am a man on the edge. I'm going to actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build a new deck right now, just to make sure I have the Mardu, we'll call it, Stag Ranger. I don't know. Just so I have it saved in my folder. I'll come back to that later. Okay. Well, I know we have I feel like we talked a lot about, I feel like this is like the show about nothing, where we talked about a lot of stuff, but I also kind of don't know what happened.
I blame you, just so we're clear.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I guess we should probably get out of here. I mean, we are actually it's a full show at this point, so unless there's something else you want to bring up before we leave.
I promise, listeners, we will talk about Legacy again. I know that the majority of you are Legacy fans. We'll be back. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, I guess the next time we... Oh, jeez, I guess with the timing. The timing's weird, I guess, with what we're doing. But, yeah, we'll definitely have some Legacy content, and I'll be posting some stuff on my Twitter, hopefully, this week. I'm going to try to keep... I think I'm going to try one more run with the Modern deck, but I'll probably go back to posting Legacy thirst traps of me playing sweet cards, just to, you know, fulfill our fans, but also to make me forget this pile of wet cards behind me. So, well, in the meantime, Mapson, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at ExpeditionMap. If you live in the greater Philadelphia area, you can find me judging an RCQ at AU... where do I live? At AU Bluebell on Saturday. Come out, play Standard, ask me questions, make my job, I don't know, easy, difficult, whatever you feel like. Doesn't really matter to me. It's all the same. Where can people find you?
If you want to find me on Saturday, I will not be anywhere around. Don't look for me. That'll be weird. But if you want to find me on the internet, you can find me at Bad Luck Bandit on Twitter. You can find the show at Depth_podcast on Twitter as well. Again, we've got all the cool social stuff, so definitely check that out. Again, we have some interesting developments in the queue, so, you know, we'll get some more announcements this week. Shout out to our friends over at Owl Central. We want to make sure they get a little bit of love, just because they do have a 5K legacy event, and we always like to support the legacy players in the area. So definitely check that out. And I guess I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
All right. Bye.
Gavin Maya taps with green, the CNC's reclaimer. Untap sack of flagstones, go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Doctor's podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in mock diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in the forest so dense it looks decomposed, with red lacquer every night's clash against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow, underneath the surface looks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The night lunges forward, going for the kill, but death shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick, the bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The night takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't seek forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dread Arbor saw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.